submit again to a yoke of bondage. If you drop down a little bit to verse 13, he says, you're called to be free, brothers. Only don't use this freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but serve one another through love. For the entire law is fulfilled in one statement, love your neighbor as yourself. And that suggests what we're going to adopt as our theme for this coming year, 2021. It's going to be called to freedom. We'll talk about that theme because there are a lot of things that we need to understand. There are a lot of things that are important to us as Christians in the 21st century. We need to treasure the freedom that we have in God. It's something that we don't always think about. And we're going to set this over against what people in the first century would have understood about freedom. And we'll do that this morning, specifically in terms of what people in the first century experienced in terms of slavery. But it's, our purpose is going to be to help us maximize our freedom so that we can, in freedom, love those people that are around us. It will help us to develop the qualities that are depicted in the book of Galatians that are the hallmarks of freedom. And we're going to spend some time doing that. And maybe most importantly, it's going to help us break free from Satan's traps that so easily can enslave us and take us back to where we were before we began to walk with God. And then finally, we're going to learn about freedom so that we can share it with everybody that's around us. We need to share this with the city of Eugene because the city of Eugene doesn't know about this freedom. So let's try to understand what people in the first century would have thought about if they had read what the Apostle Paul had written to the people in Galatia. You know, it's not enough to say, well, I understand slavery. I understand what that's all about because I saw Roots and I know about slavery. Well, slavery in Rome was not like slavery that's depicted in Roots in a lot of ways. So we need to understand slavery in the New Testament world in order to understand the impact of what Paul is saying. We've been released from slavery, and it's used literally and it's used metaphorically so that we can be free. Think about the way that it's used in the New Testament. Mark the 10th chapter, beginning about verse 43. Whoever wishes to become great among you, Jesus said, must be your servant. That's the same word as slave. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. In Galatians, the 3rd chapter, right close to the end of the chapter, verse 28, the Apostle Paul says, there's no longer Jew or Greek. There's no longer slave or free. There's no longer male or female. You're all one in Christ Jesus. 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter, verse 18 beginning, slaves, accept the authority of your masters with all deference, not only those that are kind and gentle, but also those who are harsh. As you read through the New Testament, you keep encountering slaves. I think I forgot to turn the light on up here and I can't see. How about that? As you read through the New Testament, you encounter people who were slaves in a lot of different ways. They guarded doors in Acts, the 12th chapter. they manage their owner's wealth in Matthew, the 25th chapter. They prepared feasts and they served at those feasts in Luke, the 15th chapter. Freed slaves and slave owners worshiped together. 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter, 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter, Philemon, verses 15 and 16. The imagery of slavery described a person's relationship metaphorically to God. So slavery is an important idea. So I want to think about slavery in the first century. Ted, can you give me the next slide? I'm sorry? Okay. Think about what happened when the Apostle Paul met with a man named Lysias. This is in Acts, the 22nd chapter. And beginning at about verse 28, Paul has a conversation with Lysias. And there's some things that happen in this conversation that I think I hadn't appreciated until I started thinking about what it was like to be a slave. Lysias talks about his state. And Lysias says, I'm a free man. I bought this freedom with a great sum, he says. This word that he uses for a great sum is a really old word. It's been used for a long time. It's like our word capital. It's used here according to a rule for price. And this is what Roberts says about the conversation. He says, the sale of Roman citizenship was resorted to by the emperor as a means of filling the exchequer. In other words, he would sell citizenship as a Roman in order to raise money for his projects. James I, the king of England, made baronets. It was pretty much the same thing. And there's a record of Messalina, the wife of Claudius, who would sell Roman citizenship just because she could and she wanted to have money. Lysias was probably a Greek, so he had to buy his citizenship. And then listen to what Paul says. Paul responds to Lysias and says, I'm a Roman born. It's a perfect passive. The word Roman is not in the Greek. Literally, Paul says, when Lysias says, I'm a freedman, Paul says, I was born one. This is a big deal. It's a calm. It's a very simple reply, but there's a certain pride in what the apostle says. I'm a free man. I'm a citizen of Tarsus. That didn't make Paul a Roman citizen. Tarsus was not a colony like Philippi. If you were born in Philippi, that was a Roman colony and you became a citizen. If you were born in Tarsus, you weren't automatically a Roman citizen. Some of his ancestors, at some point, maybe his father, maybe his grandfather, maybe beyond that, obtained freedom as a reward for some kind of service to the empire. Paul's family was in a good social position among both the Jews and the Romans. He talks about his Jewish social standing. He says, I was educated by the greatest of the rabbis. He was at an early age entrusted by the Jewish authorities with an important commission to go and find Christians and put them in jail. But not only that, he was treated with deference by the Romans, because beyond having status among the Jews, his citizenship and his freedom gave him status among the Romans. You read about the apostle dealing with Felix and Festus and Agrippa and Julius. All of them acknowledged that he was a free man. You see, freedom was not taken for granted in Roman culture. Freedom was a very special thing. Slavery had a long history in the ancient world. It had been practiced by the Egyptians, by the Greeks, all before the Romans ever came along, and finally it became a part of Roman culture. Go to the next slide. Most of the Roman slaves became slaves because they had been conquered by Rome. Most of the slaves were foreigners, but slavery didn't have anything to do with race. Slavery had to do with the fact that you had been conquered by Rome. And if you look at the growth of the Roman Empire, it began to grow north into Europe. It was not based on race. There were a lot of pathways to slavery. You could be a prisoner of war. In fact, in the First Punic War, Josephus says that the Romans took about 75,000 people as slaves. He also writes about the Jewish revolt in Rome at the end of the first century, and he says as a result of that Jewish revolt against Rome, 95,000 Jews were taken into slavery. There were so many, he says, that the slave market was gutted and the value of slaves decreased. Most of the slaves in early Rome were farm laborers, but when you look at the development of the economy of Rome, it began with small farms right around the city of Rome, and most of those small farms would have one or two slaves, and they would live with their owner. They ate with the owner. They worked right alongside their masters. These weren't big estates. They were small family farms that were right around the city of Rome. With almost no rights, many times, these slaves that had been captured in foreign wars worked as educators. Let's look at some of the slides. Here they're depicted as working as, Ted and I are fighting over the mouse here, sorry. Some of those Roman slaves had skills that the Romans didn't have. The Greeks had an advanced civilization. They had a lot of doctors. They had a lot of healers. The Romans didn't have that. So they took slaves, and the slaves many times functioned as doctors. Now, what they did as doctors might be called into question, but they were tutors. A lot of the Romans didn't know anything about a written language. In fact, in early Rome, they used the Greek language because the Romans didn't really have much of a language. So many of these slaves were tutors. They were educators. Now, a lot of them were farm laborers. Sometimes they lived and worked with their master. And as Rome expanded and you had the development of great estates in the Roman Empire, then you began to have slave quarters where a single estate would have a great number of slaves and they would live in mostly squalor. But many times that wasn't the case on the small family farms. You could be captured by pirates and sold into slavery, and there were a lot of slave markets throughout the Roman Empire. The most famous that you'll read about is the slave market at Delos. These pirates would capture slaves or capture people, and they would bring them into the slave market, and they would actually hang a sign around their neck that talked about the skills that they had. You could be a slave by birth. If your mother was a slave, it didn't matter who your father was, you were a slave. There were a large number of people that became slaves because they sold themselves into slavery. When economic times were hard, that was one of the ways that you could provide for yourself. Sometimes they would even sell their children into slavery in order to make money for the family. Convicted criminals were frequently enslaved and became slaves in Rome. Slavery wasn't based on race, as I said, but it was still an abusive and a degrading situation. Cruelty was not uncommon. They knew about cruelty. There is a record that indicates that a Roman citizen had the right, if he owned a slave, to punish his slave as he saw fit, even to the point of death. As bad as that is, you have to remember that a Roman father had the right to punish his wife and his children to the point of death. Roman culture was a brutal culture. During the period of Augustus, from about 27 BC to 475 BC, AD, excuse me, the supply of Roman slaves began to dry up because Rome was generally at peace and they weren't out conquering other people. And that was the major source of slaves. So when that source dried up, what they had to do was they had to turn to natural procreation. And slave owners improved the living conditions for their slaves so that they would have more children. And that was the way that they would replenish the supply of slaves. Some of the slaves, the records indicate, during this period were even given small plots that they could cultivate, and they were able to form some kind of a loose family structure. The slaves were able to raise their families and have some share in the produce that they grew. The constraint on culture among the Romans, as it applied to slaves, was you needed to preserve this valuable asset. If you had spent 100 denarii to buy a slave, you didn't just kill him because he was a valuable asset. And so that meant that you had to be a little bit careful. Now, in the later period of the Roman Empire, there were also slave rebellions. The most famous that we probably all heard of is the slave rebellion that was led by Spartacus, a Thracian slave. He was able to defeat several Roman armies. That'll tell you something about the skill level of the slaves that Spartacus was leading. But as there began to be these slave rebellions, it occurred to the masters that you can't treat them too badly or they'll rebel. And so the treatment of Roman slaves generally improved And I think about that, and it just occurs to me, you know, that when we're in slavery to Satan, Satan has to treat us reasonably well, because if he didn't, we would rebel. And so really what Satan does is he doles out some benefits, because if he doesn't dole out those benefits, we're likely to rebel, and he's got too much invested in us. He doesn't want to lose us. And so sin, doing what Satan wants us to do, is in some ways minimally pleasurable. So Satan has to be concerned about a slave rebellion. At one point in Rome, the suggestion was made that they ought to have slaves wear a special uniform, or some sort of a special garment that would identify them as slaves. Remember, I said slavery in ancient Rome was not based on race. Slaves looked just like Romans. That idea was voted down because they didn't want the slaves to realize that at certain periods, as much as 60% of the population of the city of Rome was slave. And you don't want them to understand how many of them there are, because they might rise up in rebellion. In the time of Augustus, about 30% of the population of Italy was in slavery. It was much lower in some of the provinces. In Roman Egypt, during the same period of time, only about 10% of the population was a slave. Now, for Romans, especially for slaves, there was the possibility of something called manumission, which meant that you could buy your way out of slavery. Or if you were a particularly magnanimous owner, you could grant slavery, grant freedom to your slave. When slaves received their freedom, sometimes they found themselves in a better financial position than ordinary Roman citizens. If they had been a slave in a wealthy family, they knew people who had wealth, and they were able to raise money that way. Sometimes they used their connections. And when they were freed, they became Roman citizens. They couldn't vote, and they couldn't be elected to public office. But most every other privilege that was attendant upon being a Roman citizen was theirs. And if they had children, their children would be full Roman citizens with all of the privileges. They could vote, they could be elected to public office, and they were freed citizens. Manumission is an interesting idea. As I was researching this, it made me think about how we sometimes view freedom. Manumission was not done generally for the benefit of the slave. Kind of fix that in your head. Manumission was generally the result of having served in the military and having done some great thing. It was sometimes granted because a slave who was in the position of managing his owner's wealth would have made a great amount of money for his owner, and so the owner would grant freedom to the slave. But you know, he didn't grant freedom for the good of the slave. That wasn't the purpose. manumission served two functions. The first function was it was a carrot that I could hold out there. And I could say, if you serve me well, I'll grant you your freedom. But it's all about you serving me well. It's not about doing anything for you. In essence, it's a way for me to keep you docile. It's a way for me to keep you from rebelling against the institution of slavery. I've got this carrot that I dangle out here, manumission. Wouldn't you like to be free? You're not going to do anything to upset me, are you? Manumission was not like grace. Because you see, grace that those people experienced was entirely for the benefit of the recipient. So I bring this all to a close as we kind of think about what they thought about when they read about grace, or when they read about freedom as opposed to slavery. Even the freedman, who had perhaps actually bought his freedom, or the freedman who had been freed by his magnanimous master, was not freed because it was good for him. In the first case, he paid the price. In the second case, he paid the price in a more subtle way. Grace and the freedom that grace brings is entirely for us. So when we think about freedom, and we understand that we've been called to be free, we've been called to a great benefit. We're not like those Roman slaves. Sometimes they would be marched through the city. They called them collared slaves. They would have chains around their necks. We found all kinds of Roman shackles. We don't know that. But we can appreciate what freedom does for us. It's a wonderful thing. There's a picture of, it's a relief carving of slaves being paraded through the streets. We're going to take the Lord's Supper now. Dean's going to lead us in some thoughts, but as we participate in the Lord's Supper, let's just revel in the fact that we can do this as free people. We are not slaves to Satan, and that's a great blessing.